Wake up call!
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, still buzzing about Week 10 of the National Football League. And, boy, we still got a number of games to get to. Again, started in Munich, Germany with Tampa Bay beating Seattle. And, boy, it ended last night with a 22-16 win by San Francisco over the L.A. Chargers. And I still, despite the Chargers not scoring the second half, I thought that was a very good game. But all the points in between, including never underestimate a desperate team. And the Green Bay Packers were that particular example. Now, that's a kind of an old cliche in the NFL, where you got to watch out for desperate teams. But there are teams that are desperate that are just not good enough. And no matter how desperate they are, they still aren't going to be able to get over the hump and win. I would say Jacksonville's pretty desperate, but they couldn't go to Kansas City and beat the Chiefs. You could even say the Bears are pretty desperate, yet they gave up 21 points in the fourth quarter in a loss to Detroit. But the reality of it is that Green Bay is desperate. They are a playoff team in terms of how of the consistency that they've been there with Aaron Rodgers. They had the number one seed last year in the NFC. May have lost Devontae Adams, but in the end, they also have to figure out a way to play without him. And they had lost five in a row playing the Cowboys. Now, if you know anything about this series, you know that the Packers pretty much own the Cowboys when they play. But as we know, with roster changes and things like that, it's not always a telltale sign of how a game will go. But that game went into overtime, and when you are a team at home and desperate to snap a streak, just to get something going, be very wary of those kind of football teams. So I wasn't really surprised that the Packers, who have not been playing well but still have Aaron Rodgers, were able to beat the Dallas Cowboys, a team that was playing well leading up into that game. Christian Watson had three touchdown catches, so maybe he's found his new guy. I have no idea what this means, but I do know that it's sort of consistent that every now and then you get a team that's got some talent that isn't playing well, needs to play well, and chose the right opportunity to do so. One of my big storylines, though, coming out of Week 10 was the play of the Miami Dolphins in a 39-17 win. And the Buffalo Bills are now sixth seed if the playoffs were to start today. They better watch out because the Dolphins are for real. The Jets keep winning some games. New England doesn't seem to be going anywhere. If the Bills lose a game or two here, a game or two there, they may not be hosting any games in Buffalo in the postseason. Still a ways to go. I get it. We still got 8 more weeks of this league left. So a lot can still sort itself out. But in the end, the AFC East, Buffalo's coming back a bit to them, and they better be careful. That loss to Minnesota, as much as we hyped that up, ended up being one of the most important games of week number 10, if not the important game of week 10.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, it's the good, the bad, and the dumb Monday edition. We've had the whole weekend of college football, NFL football, NBA, news, all of that good stuff. What is the good of the day as we get your week started?
We're going to stick with the NFL. The good of the day comes from the NFL. Comes from the NFL announcing that John Madden will be honored during all the Thanksgiving games.
I loved that bit of news. That happened late last week.
Yeah,
that
late
was
Friday.
Pretty awesome. Late Friday. Made that announcement. That was very, very cool.
You know what? I'm just thinking about that since you mentioned it was late. That's a good Friday news dump by the NFL.
It really is.
Usually we get terrible news and we're like, oh my God, this one is fantastic. So what they're going to do, there's going to be on each of the fields for the three games, there's going to be a little icon of John Madden or signature in John Madden. And then each of the players are going to be wearing a sticker on the back of their helmet.
Yeah.
That John Madden pose with his fist raised up in the air. And you know what? It just makes sense. I don't know if all three of them will do it, but you know, we definitely will still be getting the John Madden commemorative turkey leg.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's great.
But I want every game to have it now.
What's very cool is that because John Madden pretty much worked for all these networks, right? I mean, he's worked for everybody. At some point, he was on CBS. At some point, he was on ABC doing Monday Night Football. And then he was on NBC and Sunday Night Football. So he's done them all. they're all going to honor
him. He did Fox,
so, Fox,
right?
He did Fox. So he's held a position with every one of them. So every one of them has a special John Madden in their company memory. And so they're all going to do it. It's great. And I'm glad. And I'm glad it came from the league, not from the networks. The league sort of said this. This is what's going to happen on this particular day. And it's fantastic. And I used to love the turkey leg thing, the turducken. I didn't know there was such a thing called turducken until he brought it up to my lexicon.
Did
he invent it?
I'm thinking he invented it.
Did somebody invent it for him and then it became a thing?
Maybe.
I don't know. That was pretty awesome. So
it's for people who don't like turkey, they eat duck.
Yeah. I know when we did the first show after the news of his passing, it was I remember just saying I could do a whole hour on his coaching, his broadcasting and video game. Like I could do like the influence of the three things that he became synonymous with.
Yes.
And it's such a rarity that you can have that. It's like Tiger Woods has his video game, but he wasn't on a train with the EA Sports guy saying how you could do it with limited technology.
No.
Like Madden was involved.
Augustus is going to be much harder than that.
Right, exactly. Like
no one would birdie that hole.
They had to sit John Madden down on a 3-day train ride, and he had to explain football to the EA guy. And the EA guys, I don't know if we have enough memory for this back in the old days. And Madden said, you have to find it because you're going to 11 on 11 is football. That's it. Not 5-on-5. So this is how it is. And he explained why 11 on 11 football was so important. And when they got off the train, he went, we're going to have to find a way to do 11 on 11 football. And now look what it is now. And now it looks like your TV show. It looks like what your TV has. So
I'm amazed every time because my sons have the latest version, and they'll every once in a while they'll play it, and I'll sit back and I'll be looking at them like, I can't really believe what I'm watching.
Yeah, I know.
This
it's
is
crazy.
So far removed good. From the pixelated Nintendo Blitz or what NFL Blitz that I was playing back in the day.
When I used to love the old Madden when the little ambulance used to come out to get the guy off the field. And then you would see the receivers in box A, B, or C. You had to pick one, and that's the one you had to throw to. Yeah, it was, but he was part of that. So, yeah, I'm glad the NFL is doing that. It's very, very cool. Cool. All right, what's the bad of the day then?
The bad of the day is non-sports related. It was happened at Wings Over Texas over the weekend.
Yeah, boy, did I see that.
I mean, I'm sure everyone has seen the video by now. Just two World War II era planes collided with one another. All six who were involved in that air collision were killed.
Why are we still doing air shows?
The reason why I was also bringing this up, too, is because that those two planes I saw 2 weeks ago when I went to an air show.
Yeah. Do they
in Houston.
Do they make enough money that they do it, or what is the purpose of the air shows? I've seen them, but
I've
never understood why do we do it, just to show them off?
I think it's to show them off. I think, honestly, my feeling is not – I don't know what this type of air show was because I don't think it was full-board military. Like, I don't think the Blue Angels or Thunderbirds or any other military aircraft were there. What I think it is, like, when you go to one of those type of air shows where you have military aircraft, like current military aircraft, I think it's a big recruiting event.
Yeah, I got you. Okay, that makes sense. That makes sense.
I think it's just I think it's just to show it off.
The big plane looked like it was landing, right?
No, that's actually it was doing a flyby.
So it wasn't going down towards the airport?
No.
I know it crashed near the airport.
Yeah, it crashed over the airport. They were doing like they just do a bunch of passes, like they're just kind of constantly doing flybys. Everyone's getting a chance to see history flying above them. I mean, the B-17 was used extensively during World War II. I think it was a P-61, the plane that crashed into the bigger one.
Do we have
any
idea why it did that?
I have no idea. The only thing I can think of is that maybe the pilot blacked out, or that he was, because he was coming in at such a steep bank, that he couldn't see the B-17 until it was too late.
Oh, that makes sense.
Because he sliced right through that tail, and, I mean, that thing just dropped like a stone out of the sky.
By the way, I know I'm asking a lot here. I know I am. But we live in a crazy world where social media is so nasty. It's so terrible. So people were posting video of this because they're watching the planes, and they're filming it. And they want to film the planes. And then the plane explodes, gets hit, lands, explodes. And people on social media were like,
just like everybody, film it rather than... What are people supposed to do? Right. Run to a fireball 1,000 yards away and help with what? Like, they're not filming it because they see a fireball and film it. They were filming the plane because it was an exciting time, and they happened to catch the explosion. And there's, right. What are they supposed to do, run into a fire? Like, and oh, by the way, they don't want you doing those things.
No, like, they don't actually, I mean, you
would could probably, be in the way.
You would actually more than likely be arrested for running onto the runway.
Right.
Even in a situation like that.
Like, people are like, oh my God, hearts and prayers go out to these. Oh God. They're like, yeah, you were filming it. You didn't help. Like, stop with this stuff, people.
Well, the other one.
I'm asking too much because I know it's just people's. No, people
the,
love but
the,
to
other,
do
the other one that I saw that infuriated me was like, it's fake. Look, where did the second plane go?
Yeah, right.
It's like, you know, the second plane just sliced through the back of a plane. Come on.
That's terrible.
Be better than that.
Really sad. That was really sad because. They look fun, but I mean, at the same time, I'm like, it feels like, again, doesn't happen a lot. I'm not saying, like, there's air shows happen all the time, but I feel like every now and then, somewhere in the world, it's like, tragedy at this air show. It just pops up enough in the news.
Yeah.
Not frequently. It's not every week. It's not every month, but it pops up every now and then to make me go, oh, are we still doing this?
Well, and that's the thing. They'll rethink about, you know, this air show, and they'll rethink, like, oh, what do they do? You know, maybe we don't have these old planes flying anymore, and leave it to the military who, you know, I mean, I what happened to the control tower?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, why didn't they warn each other that they were in the way? I don't know.
Yeah, that was really sad.
So we may not know what happened because neither of these planes were carrying black boxes because they're so old they don't.
Of course. What was the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day. Now, I need your help with this one, Tony.
All right.
And any of the listeners out there, if you could help determine who is the dumb here. After LSU's win, Brian Kelly took to the podium. Did you hear about the story?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I heard a little bit of it. Yeah.
So Brian Kelly took to the podium and was talking about his star freshman defensive player, Harold Perkins, and comparing him to Michael Jordan. And what he said to him was like, man, he's like, you know, you were playing like MJ during his flu game, because I guess Harold Perkins had a bit of a tickle in his throat or
right.
cough. And he's, you know, compared him to MJ's flu game. To which Harold Perkins went, who's MJ? So this is where I don't know. Is it dumb for Harold Perkins not to know who MJ is? Or is this story made up, because it feels like Brian Kelly would make a story up like this?
I think it's made up. I think he knows who Michael Jordan is. I can't imagine you growing up and not even if he played before you were born.
He's a freshman. He's 18, maybe 19, right?
Right.
So he's a. I mean. You're still, I mean,
he's still such a cultural person.
Yeah. That's where I'm having a hard discussion. I mean, Michael Jordan was out of the league by 2000. I'm figuring 2004.
Yeah, it was like 2004 or 5, something like that. Yeah. I kind of lost track of the Wizard days.
Yeah, I know. We don't count those.
Yeah, I do
so
remember
we say
seeing
99,
him.
Right?
I saw him at the Pepsi Center when they came to visit one, and I want to say it was like 2003. But I purposely went to that game because I was like, I've never seen Michael Jordan play.
So, yeah, but I mean. So, I would have believed that everyone knows. Even my kids know who Michael Jordan is. I'll give my six-year-old credit for not knowing who Michael Jordan is yet. But he will know.
Brian Kelly might have elaborated that a little bit. But at the same time, you run the risk if you elaborate that and your player goes, whoa, 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 coach. All right. Let's not make me look like an idiot.
Well, do you think Brian Kelly cares? He had an accent once.
You know? Yeah. Yeah.
He had a Louisiana accent after being there for a week, and then now he's lost it.
So why not lie?
So why not just, you know, embellish on it a little bit and go, yeah, LSU, we're having a great season. This guy doesn't know who MJ is.
It's like, you know, telling a, you know, story. Whenever you tell a story, don't we all embellish a story a little bit?
Of course.
Make it a little bit better than reality. I think we all do that.
I mean, I've never caught a fish under, you know, a foot long.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly. So I think we all embellish a little bit. It's always a little bit more dramatic than it actually was, you know, all that kind of stuff, because we're storytellers, you know, we tell stories, and that's if you really got the details, it wouldn't be as great, but maybe that's what happened here. But yeah, the idea of it's I think it would be hard to grow up, especially if you're an athlete capable of playing at LSU, meaning that your whole life you've probably been separate.
Sports.
you're so good at sports. You've dived into that world a little deeper than others that you wouldn't. Even if you're 18, you wouldn't know who.
Now maybe
you would know who one of the greatest basketball players is of all time.
Do we give him credit? Maybe he doesn't know MJ as the initials. Maybe he's just heard of Jordan.
Right. Because maybe he never said. Maybe you know what? Wait a minute. Let's rewind that for a second. Is it possible he didn't know the context of MJ flu game? Now that's a possibility.
Yeah.
That an 18-year-old may not, like my kid knows who Michael Jordan is, but if I told him, I said, "Oh yeah, remember the Utah flu game?" You're like, "No, like I don't know him that
well."
Yeah,
I get that.
Do you know what I mean? Maybe the Utah flu game would
confuse anybody, but I think
right.
MJ flu game?
But maybe he's like, I know. Listen, maybe he's as an 18, he goes, "Look, guys, I know Michael Jordan, but I don't know every detail of everything he ever did. He's way before my time. You're talking mid 90s. I was born in 2005.
Yeah, but I'm going to go back to what you said though. If he is an athlete incredible enough to play at LSU, shouldn't he have watched The Last Dance?
Yeah, I guess he should have watched The Last Dance.
There was nothing else on at the time.
Right? I guess he should have watched The Last Dance. So yeah, so I can maybe MJ flu game, he's like,
yeah.
I don't know what that is.
Maybe
that's
we give
possible.
Him credit for that.
You know what I mean?
Still feels like a stretch though.
No, not the flu game part.
Not the flu game part, right? MJ.
Like, look. I make a living. I make a living doing this for a living. I mean, I dive into sports all the time. I mean, this is what I do. I read books. I read history. But if my dad was like Koufax's second no hitter, I couldn't tell you what year that was or what the context of it was. You know
true.
What I mean?
Oh yeah. No.
You know
yeah,
what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I know who Sandy Koufax is, but if my dad's like, oh yeah, aren't you familiar with his 1963 no hitter against? I'd be like, no. I know he threw a bunch of them, but I don't know what you're talking about. So if there was a famous attach, especially again, if you're using the initials of a player and throwing it into a context of something they never heard, maybe that did work. Maybe that did happen. I'm trying to find an angle where Brian Kelly isn't outright lying, where the player goes,
yeah.
Coach, I know who Michael Jordan is. You didn't have to lie about that. And the player going, I've never heard of Michael Jordan in my life. Like there's something in the middle seems more plausible. Does that make sense? Like MJ flu game. Oh, what's that? And he goes, oh, Michael Jordan played a finals game with the flu and won the championship against Utah. Oh, I didn't know about that.
Yeah, I didn't put the two and two together. He's growing up knowing it's like MJ's flu game. Wasn't that the pizza game?
Let's. I hate to bring this up because I know we're getting older. I hate to bring this up, but that game is like 25 years old.
You didn't need to go there, though.
What, it was 98? Yeah, it's getting like to be close to 25 years.
It'll be 25 next year.
Yeah, so it's pretty good. All right, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb as we continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. We continue week 10 in the NFL. It finishes up tonight, Washington and Philadelphia. The Eagles at 8-0, still undefeated, only undefeated team left. But man, things are really getting interesting. This holiday season, find what you love at Total Wine & More. With so many great bottles to choose from, it's easy to find a new favorite Cabernet or Chardonnay or the perfect gifts for everyone on your list with some help from a friendly guide. And all with the confidence of knowing you found something special for the lowest price. Find what you love, love what you find. Only at Total Wine & More. Delivery available in most areas. Visit TotalWine.com to learn more. Drink responsibly. Be 21. All right, so yesterday there were some games that were exciting, thrilling. Buffalo and Minnesota was, I thought, the game of the year. Miami really put on a show against Cleveland, winning 39-17. Patrick Mahomes had four touchdowns against Jacksonville, and Justin Fields ran some more. But in the end, Dan Campbell picked up the win as the Lions beat the Bears at Soldier Field. But there was one game in particular where I'm starting to feel a little bad for this team. And again, it's a team that I know pretty well, I've known pretty well. It's the Denver Broncos. And they lose to Tennessee 17-10. Now, the Broncos are 3-6. And we know their story. Their offense isn't doing anything. Nathaniel Hackett, the play caller in Green Bay, is their head coach. They got Russell Wilson this offseason. But in the end, they can't do anything. You know what's really sad about this? Is that, here's the thing. They are a 3-6 football team. If their offense had managed just 18 points in every game they played. That's all. Just score 18 points. That's two touchdowns and maybe three touchdowns or six field goals, however you want to make it. The Broncos would be 8-1. They'd be 8-1. That's remarkable. Their defense is playing at a sky-high level. You have to go back to the 1946 Pittsburgh Steelers, and even back then, I'm not sure the statistics were terribly accurate, to find an NFL team that is number one in scoring defense and last in the league at scoring points. Not bottom half, not bottom 10, not bottom five. The Denver Broncos defense is the number one scoring defense in the league. 16.6 points per game. That's all you're getting from that Broncos defense. And yet, they're only scoring 14.5 points per game. And again, if they just scored 18 in every game they played, they'd be 8-1. It doesn't seem like a lot to ask of Russell Wilson and the Broncos offense to put up 18 points. Again, they're not high fly scoring fun, get it, you know, all of that. But they should be scoring a few more points than 14 points a game. So the Broncos close? Is that what I'm saying? No, because in the end, their offense is very problematic and injuries are piling up. Jerry Jeudy, their wide receiver, just walked off the field in Nashville yesterday. He's got an ankle issue that may cost him a game or two. Maybe no games. We'll see. He's going to be evaluated this week. But injuries continue to plague this team. But Russell Wilson still can't produce. He doesn't matter if he wears the plays on his wrist or whatever. They cannot score. And I it's not that I feel bad for them because I don't have any sympathy at this level. You are what you are. But here, I've said this a lot. Russell Wilson's acquisition by the Broncos didn't guarantee anything. I wasn't super skeptical of this. I thought it was certainly better than everybody else that has kind of gone through to try to get a second chance at life. Everybody else that the Broncos were bringing in, a Case Keenum, Joe Flacco, Teddy Bridgewater, drafting Drew Lock, all the list, were guys that were either trying to showcase something to the league for the very first time, like Paxton Lynch or Drew Lock or Trevor Siemian, or they were quarterbacks that were cast offs that were trying to figure out where their new home was going to be. In Wilson's case, he was still a good football player for Seattle. It just was better for Seattle to part ways with them, and the landing spot was Denver. Right, it would be as if the Packers had traded Aaron Rodgers to Denver. We wouldn't say Aaron Rodgers in the latter half of his career trying to find a new home. Russell Wilson is locked into this team, or at least money wise, from dead cap or whatever they do with him till 2028. He got a 5-year extension on the contract that ends next year, so he's going to be there a long time. But as everybody knows, as the years get going, and your competition is finding ways to fine-tune itself and to iron up the knives, the Broncos better be careful. But when I look at what they're doing, it's like running your engine at 10,000 RPMs. Eventually, it's going to crack, right? Eventually, it's going to break. Can the Broncos' defense, as well as they played, keep that up? Are they spoiling a very, very good defense this 1 year? Yeah, next year players may change, different, whatever may happen. We're not guaranteed that the Broncos defense is going to be this good for the next couple of years until the offense figures itself out. But they're a mediocre running team. They're a mediocre passing team. Again, they can't put the ball in the end zone. And they lost 17-10 yesterday. 17-10. The Titans aren't a team that is going to beat you down defensively, right? The Titans have injury problems of their own. And yet, kept Denver out of the end zone in that second half. Kept them out of the scoreboard in the second half. Russell Wilson picked late. And the Titans go on to win and become 6-3. And the Broncos are going to walk away with a season this year of massive disappointment. Massive disappointment. All right, come back. More games in the NFL as we roll along. Again, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Good to be with you. Week 10 in the NFL. Boy, a lot to digest. As we continue, it's Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. Wake Up Call. Good Monday to you. Real quick, I'm not going to get too much on college football. We can do that tomorrow, but Oregon lost over the weekend. Ha! Man, doesn't it always seem to work out that way? Doesn't it seem to be always be that one that's like, yeah, that's kind of how it goes.
Yep. Never fails.
Like, it really doesn't. It's really amazing. Like, you go, you get these moments in college football. It happens all the time where they're like, oh, there's like 12 teams here that could be in the national. Oh my God, what are we going to do when we have seven unbeaten teams? And like, relax, we're not going to have seven unbeaten teams. But no, chill, we're not. And like, what about these one lost teams? Yeah, don't worry, it'll sort itself. Something will happen. Don't worry. You can't always count on it because you don't know where it's coming or what it's doing. But then it happens, and you go, yep, there we go. There we go. TCU did beat Texas over the weekend. That's kind of a big – that was kind of a big game. Like, could they – you know, if they lose that game, it opens the door for Tennessee to get back into this thing. You know?
I mean, there is – you know, with Oregon losing, though, it does set up controversy. Or well, controversy to come.
Yeah, it
– because it would have been easier had – Oregon stayed unbeaten, TCU stayed unbeaten, you know, Georgia stays unbeaten, then you have Ohio State, Michigan kind of battle it out with each other. Then you go, oh, we just got the unbeaten teams. There we go. Done.
It's, to me, it once the committee didn't want to do this. I know they didn't, because I think when in 2014 when they came out, they said, hey, TCU Baylor, I'm sorry you're not playing in a championship game, but we do want championship games. Sorry. And so they kept both of them out. And then Ohio State came in, and they ended up winning the national championship. But the committee sort of was sending a message, right? We want you to play tougher games. You better not be playing cupcakes, you know, every game a cupcake in your non-conference schedule. And you know what? You got to win the championship. But then eventually it came around. They were like, there was that one year Alabama was you know, got in when they weren't in they didn't play in their conference championship game. And then all of a sudden that opened the door for this kind of conversation. And I think it's a little unfair because it does require that teams play a very, very tough football game at the end of their season when others do not. And I think that creates a problem. Ohio State, Michigan, if both of those teams are unbeaten at the end of the season, does the loser of that game benefit if the winner of that game doesn't win the Big Ten title? Now, it's very likely that the winner of this game is going to win the Big Ten title. But let's say they didn't.
Very true.
Let's say they didn't. And their loss is fresher. And would you put them in? You go, well, their loss is here. But if you're, let's say, in this case, let's say you're Michigan. And let's just take a real quick look at the conference standings right now, the way it's sort of played out. Because they're Michigan and Ohio State will meet each other. Right now, the team out of the West that would be the team to play would be Purdue. Purdue is 6-4. Now I'm not saying I'm not saying this is going to happen. But let's say you're Ohio State, you beat Michigan.
Lost Michigan as an audience.
Right, I know. Let's say Michigan is just sitting. Well, I'm going to get him back a little bit.
Yeah, okay.
So Michigan goes, oh man, we lost. We're not playing in the Big Ten title game. And then Ohio State beats Michigan. But let's say it's close. Let's say it's coming down to the wire. It's an epic game. It's a classic. And it's close, back and forth. And
kind of Buffalo, Minnesota close.
Ohio State goes and loses for whatever. However they lose to Purdue. Right? Let's just say that played out. If you're Michigan, don't you stand on a better record than, like, don't you stand on a better thing? Like, we didn't have to play the extra game.
No,
our only loss is a classic on the road to Ohio State. So why are we in? Tennessee is going to do this. Tennessee is going to sit back and win all the rest of their games and then go, hey, we only lost was in Athens to Georgia. Can you fault us for that? We beat Alabama. We beat LSU, right? We beat everybody else. Sorry we didn't get to go to Atlanta, but here we are with our one loss. And so because the committee did say, you know, we can take non-conference champion participants in the playoff, it's almost like, well, if I got one loss, why would I want to play that extra game?
Right.
If it could hurt me.
I mean, all of a sudden, you're looking at like Tennessee. Like, well, Tennessee would be a much better draw, a much better game than
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's you know, better. They feel that they're a better team than a one-loss Ohio State or one-loss Michigan.
Is USC? Is USC not good enough to be in this conversation at 9-1? Apparently not, right?
Well, that's been the narrative for USC all this entire season. It's like, who have they beaten? Yeah. Kind of like they've kind of been Minnesota. They've been the Vikings of the college football world.
Yep. And boy, they're, you know, at least the AP right now, they love themselves some LSU. We'll see Tuesday night how much the committee is favoring this. We know the top four because there's only four unbeaten teams. So we know that. My question is going to be who's five, who's six, who's seven, because that is going to be playing into the Michigan-Ohio State factor. If TCU doesn't go undefeated factor, Georgia's pretty comfortable. Georgia loses the SEC title game.
I think they're in no matter what. Right. But if they all of a sudden imploded, two losses would knock them out, right?
Right. Right. Yeah. That's the other thing too. And that's another problem that this thing has, right? If you're Georgia, you're the number one team in the country, right? You've got three games. You got three games left on your season. You've got Kentucky, Georgia Tech, and then you'll play LSU because both teams have now clinched in Atlanta on December 3rd. Okay. But let's say Kentucky, who's not going to be ranked, by the way, by the committee, I don't think. I don't know.
No, there's no way they can't.
They just lost to Vanderbilt. Yeah. So
who?
Right. So if Kentucky beats them in Lexington, it's a shocking Saturday. And they say, well, we have a loss. It's not, maybe not as, that loss doesn't, is not as good as Tennessee, but we go to LSU. And if we lose that game, we're out. We're not even in the conversation because we had to play the extra game when other teams didn't have to play the extra game. So it does become a little bit of a problem, but it does, like I said, a lot of this stuff, I hate to say it because people want 16-team playoffs and they think there's 16 quality teams. I won't argue that. I know that, you know, your 16 good is not my 16 good. I get it. But it does work itself out pretty good. We don't have a history of the college football playoff from 2014 up. We do not have a history of manic controversy, mental breakdowns, people screaming. We have them every now and then, but not after the first year when they told TCU and Baylor they couldn't go. I thought, oh, this thing's not going to work. I was like, this is a mess. They're going to be fixing this pretty soon. The only way they fixed it was the Big 12 said, okay, fine, we'll have a championship game. Right? We didn't want one, but now we have to have one, apparently. And so they did. They brought it back. So that, but it's not been filled up that much with crazy. They don't know what they're thinking. Oh, I'm sure there's a fan base or two that has screamed, but I'm talking nationally, collectively. We haven't gone, okay, now they've gone too far. We'll see how this plays out, though. The Ohio State Michigan situation to me is I still think this is the, you know, this is the thing that is got to be discussed. The question is at the end of the season, where would my hope, just because I like these kind of storylines, my hope is Ohio State and Michigan play an epic game. I hope they play an epic game where both teams play so well. C.J. Stroud is excellent. McNamara is excellent. The players come out to play, and you really see that both teams are great, and no one was fluking it up to a 11-0 record leading up to that contest. Because then the conversation is, okay, how good are you at one loss? Then Tennessee is at one loss. That USC is at one loss. That Clemson is at one loss. If it all plays itself out, where are you in the pecking order of these other one loss teams? That to me is going to be the question. That to me is going to be the question. And would you know? So we shall see. It's going to be interesting to tomorrow night to see the bottom, not the four. The four is
the four we already know. But five and six.
Five and six.
And who's like that fringe, like seven, maybe even eight, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But maybe even eight. Maybe go down to see where they like USC. Where is Alabama? Is Alabama ahead of Clemson?
I've heard Alabama's out.
Not out. I mean not in the playoff. Not in the playoff. No, but I mean like where are they? Like could if you're Clemson and you're trying to get back in this thing, and I don't know if you can, but if you're behind Alabama, you're not going anywhere. If they think you're less than Alabama with one loss, then you're not moving up. Alabama can't get in. Alabama can't get in because they just can't get in. They can't do it. No, because LSU, if LSU loses to Georgia, that's three losses. So that obviously puts them out. But if LSU wins that game against Georgia, they're in this very very slim chance that a two team gets in.
At the same time, but I mean, you know, I'm looking at four teams. I mean, ten. barring a catastrophe, Tennessee would be ahead of Alabama.
Well, I'd have to think, right? Absolutely. And that's where Tennessee's sitting pretty. They got two easy games left. They got two games where they should roll. And believe me, for whatever reason, Josh Heupel still thinks that there's style points to be won because he threw up some touchdowns against Missouri at the end of that game. But they've got South Carolina and Vanderbilt on their schedule, and they will roll past both of those schools.
I don't know. That mighty Vandy just took down Kentucky.
So when that's all said and done, they'll sit back at 11-1 and go, all right, what are we waiting for? Let's just sit around and wait for this.
Can we go this far as Kentucky losing to Vandy sets up a very trap game feel to their game against Georgia?
Kentucky? Yeah, maybe.
No. If Kentucky beats Georgia, would tearing down the goalpost be good enough, or do they need to blow up the entire stadium?
They might need to blow up the entire stadium if they pull that off. Kentucky football beats the number one team and the defending national champions in college football? Yeah. They'll burn that thing to the ground. You kidding? It'd be great.
There's no marching a goalpost to the river.
No. It's look.
Can't do what Tennessee did. Kentucky, look what we can do.
And I mean this with respect to Alabama. I really mean this with a lot of respect to Alabama.
With all due respect.
With all respect, because I as a guy that has seen, you know, has watched Alabama tear through this SEC since Saban got there and got that machine rolling when they won their national championship in 2009 and it was off to the races. Here's the thing. And I said this before, but it's worth repeating. The expansion of the playoff by however you want to expand it by 8, 12 with some by 16 and, you know, whatever. You are going to miss, I swear to God, you are going to miss the night during the regular season when you feel like Alabama's done. That one game, that one moment in Baton Rouge, or that one moment somewhere in Auburn or wherever, where you go, oh, they're cooked now. Because if you expand the playoff and you allow Nick Saban a second chance to throw his team into the postseason, then it allows Nick Saban to play the regular season in one way and then towards the end a different way, where he can go, look, I'm fixing the problems. I now know the problems, and it's not too late to fix it. We may be a 5 seed, we may be a 7 seed, but we are fixing these problems. And that's the danger. The danger is that they're not going to ever go away. And you might get sick of them even more. Because it reminds me of that one year Kentucky basketball was an 8 seed in the tournament when they caught hot. Because they struggled at the beginning of the year that one year. That was 2014. They were struggling. And Calipari went, hold on. I'm going to move this. I'm going to change this. Had the Harrison twins on board. They were killing it. And they were killing it. And then all of a sudden they were playing great basketball. And they went to the SEC championship game against Florida. They lost a close game to Florida. And then the committee gave them an 8 seed. And they became the most dangerous 8 seed you didn't want to play. And then that year they went to the Final Four and lost to UConn. Alabama could be that, where they're like, oh, we lost to LSU, or we lost to Auburn, or we lost to Ole Miss, or we lost to Mississippi State. But don't worry about it. When we get into this tournament, we are cleaning up. And that's the big worry, is that you won't bury these kind of iconic teams in an 8-team playoff. All right, on Twitter, at Team Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's as we continue.
Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, coming up in hour number three, more of the NFL Week 10. Again, Monday Night Football tonight, Washington, Philadelphia. They're trying to sell this as like, you never know in the NFC East. It's true, I guess. But I don't know, Washington just doesn't pop. They know they won 3 in a row before they lost to the Vikings.
No.
They just don't pop to me. I'm sorry.
They don't.
I don't know what to say about them. I don't know, that is doesn't it, mean is they it because win tonight and pull this, you know.
No, but is it because they're like a tainted team to us? Like the only time we're
that's
really
a good question.
You know, there's so much off the field stuff going on that we could barely name what's going on the field.
Yeah, that's a good question. So the question in Dallas this morning is: should Mike McCarthy have kicked a field goal in overtime, or go for it like he did, where he turned the ball over, or punt? Tony Dungy said in the Sunday Night in Football in America show he would have punted in that overtime situation. But they went for it. Why? Have you noticed this trend lately? Is it just me that I feel like whenever there's like, all right, they got fourth and one here, Tony. And then they throw like deep downfield.
Yeah.
Like what happened to like some sort of quick out to get a yard? Or I don't know if running is like too expected. So maybe you're trying to get one-on-one coverage. But man, the pass has to be perfect. The receiver has to be in position. You're just trying to get 1 yard to keep the drive alive. You're not trying to get the home run shot. And then it falls incomplete. Like the Prescott fourth down play was him rolling around and they're getting pressure and he just heaves it up there. And then they turn the ball over and the Packers end up driving downfield to kick a field goal to win it. Like, I'm not asking you to tell the team ahead of you, hey, we're going for the quarterback sneak. But I always feel like they're trying to get 20 yards on a 4th-and-1. And I don't know why you would run a high-risk play like that. So this was 4th-and-3. It was at the Green Bay 35-yard line. It was going to be a 53-yard field goal if they were to try it. It was into the wind, so it was very unlikely to make it. You know, obviously it would have given Green Bay good field position. You don't want to punt from the 35-yard line, but at the same time, do you want to do the pin thing? Your defense is awesome, and you would have had an opportunity rather than go for a 4. Maybe it just felt like your offense could get 3 yards, but that play in particular didn't really have much of a chance of getting 3 yards. All right, well, hour 3 is coming up next. More from the NFL as we continue. It is Wake Up Call. Thanks for joining us in Sports Map Radio.